This is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, as I like to say, that's the right answer. Alrighty, good evening again, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This net is conducted weekly, or whenever I remember it, or someone else is kind enough to bring it up in my absence, on the 2-meter repeater of the Venture Crew 7373 Amateur Radio Club, 146-835, located in Pearl River, New York. PL is 151-4 if it's on. Might be on carrier access, I'm not quite sure at this point. And of course, the offset is minus 600 kilohertz. In any case, the purpose of this net is to have a conversation about amateur radio, about electronics, computers, telecommunications, natural sciences that underlie our wonderful and glorious hobby, and of course, how we use the radio, our experiences. All is fair game, so you pretty much talk about anything you want as long as you relate it back to something related to the art. So, with no further ado, let's talk about how we check in. We check in with our call sign, our names. Then we give an indication of whether you have a question, comment, for sale, swap, or wanted item, some combination of those things, or we say none of the above. You might ask, why none of the above? Well, if you don't have anything at this point to add, it's helpful to know you're there, so at least you can become an audience, and we can tailor the conversation for, you know, something of interest to you. And if you don't check in, we don't know to do that. So, with no further ado, stations whose call signs begin with Whiskey, please call K2BAR. All right, one more time for Whiskeys. Okay, stations whose call signs begin with November. Okay, one more time for those nice folks with Kilo call signs.
W2TTT. This is KD2BKD, Bob, just listening.
Okay, Bob, very good. I have some pointers regarding your very nice gizmo that you made for the Raspberry Pi and for the Zoom spot. I'll go over that with you at some point. Any other kilos?
Kilos, Thule Mouth, X-ray, and I'll have a comment.
Gotcha, John. Any other kilos? All right, how about alphas? Okay, any call sign, any format. All right, well, let's dig right into it. K2LAX, your comment, K2BAR.
Just a quick one. I don't know who the gentleman was on Barra the other night, but they brought up FP8, which I wasn't familiar with, and I looked it up and downloaded the latest upgrade of WJTJ or whatever that is, WSTJ software, and fooled around with FP8 and had about 20 contacts this morning. It was pretty interesting. It was pretty amazing. Pretty good protocol. Over.
NJ2BS. Repeat.
Yeah, I understand they're working on a contest version of it, so it's a little quicker. That's going to be pretty cool. Very good. I have not had a chance to do it. I'm embarrassed to say this came out last summer, and I have not had a chance to really dig into HF. In fact, between the two nets tonight, I did something really novel. I powered up my HF radio, and right on the frequency where I happened to be sitting was November Charlie 4 Lima, Mal down in Hollywood, Florida, and calling CQ with an old SB-102. It sounded great. I gave him a 5 and 9. We had a nice chat. He gave me a 5 and 9. But then somebody else broke in. November 0, Sierra Papa. I forgot where he was, just off the top of my head. But Dennis was also there. Oddly enough, also running an SB-102. So in my case, I was running an ICOM 746 Pro, but that's all well and good and happy, happy. One of the things I will be doing over the next couple of weeks is getting my my Flex 5000 back on the air, and that should be exciting. But I just haven't had a chance to do that yet. But the desk is getting clearer and clearer and clearer, and the floor is getting clearer and clearer and clearer. So it's all good. We're getting excited about the state of our ham shack. Maybe by fall it'll be actually pleasurable to be in here as opposed to a bit crowded. By the way, I'm on another radio. I have two workbenches. Actually, I have one operating desk and one workbench. And this is the workbench dual band radio. And it's an ICOM, pardon me, a Yaesu FTM 400 XDR. And it's been working out pretty well. I have two of them. I have one in the car and one here. And I forget, I think this is the dash one, and the one in the car is dash two, or vice versa. But you can tell which one dances around my block and which one dances around all over the neighborhood, as it were. That's the difference between the two. An APRS. So, John, back to you, K2LAX, KQBR.
Yeah, what band do you usually like to work?
Well, what I like to work and what I get to work are different, right? So, I'm most often probably on 440 most of the day, commuter hours, and although I do listen here as well when I'm mobile, would welcome a call here anytime. But I'm usually on 442 Simplex, I mean, 442, pardon me, Repeat and Wayne. And then, of course, also on various DMR talk groups, usually TAC 310 is one of my favorites for DMR, and I usually access via UHF hotspot that I have here. And then on HF, VHF, I actually like 6 meters, and 2 meters, 222, 432, on up. I've got everything through 1296. That's convenient. Then I've got a bunch of mesh stuff. I enjoy working with that, too. Kind of blends my microwave interests with my computer and networking interests. So they're kind of fun. My next goal is to actually put my my hotspot in a weatherproof box with power over Ethernet to power it and get it up on the roof so that way it'll have some decent coverage and network it via the mesh, which I think would be kind of cool, just around the house, as it were. But that would make it available to others as well, if they so desire. So we shall see. That's what I like to do. I mean, 6 meters is probably my favorite VHF band. But I do operate 40. 40 meters is generally a pleasant band. It's not as competitive as 80, pardon me, as 20, and not as difficult to get on as 80.
Yeah, roger that. Well, some evening you can check out 7245 around 8 to 9 o'clock is the net that I run, or one of my gentlemen run it.
So 7245, what time?
8 o'clock East Coast time. We run 1 hour that session, and then there's another session later on. Mostly West Coast guys, it starts at 10 o'clock, and it's either 7245 or 7243. But it's usually, the net's usually quiet then, which is nice.
I'll keep that in mind. That's really good. Thank you for that. All right, but you're enjoying FT8, and I have plenty of, Ring Blaster, Ring Blaster kind of interfaces, and so it's really no big deal to get on the air and get digital modes running. I have it for my 7000. I think I have something I can put on for my 746 Pro. I think I've got one of the dual units, so I could certainly do that. And of course, if I get the Flex 5000 back on the air, I can do the whole thing in software, which is kind of nifty, using virtual audio cables. So it saves me a physical interface, to say the least.
anything to this?
Yeah, I heard virtual audio cable. So you use that particular application on the PC?
I do with my Flex radios. I use that to route audio around and such. It basically provides you with essentially a audio patch panel capability and splicing and dicing.
Yeah, very interesting. I use that at work also to do SIP phone testing. So, to get it into this equipment.
Sure, why not? Well, just for reference, for business reasons I can't disclose here, one of my colleagues who has annual equipment budget availability said to me, hey, what do you think our initiative should be for next year? Of course, we're in April, but this is when the budget bids have to go in and such. So we put in for 3 Flex 6600s, which is the latest and greatest high-end unit that they have. It also provides what's their remote front panel called? I can't remember now. But that beautiful thing in the version 2 mode. And 2 amplifiers. Part of our objective is to be able to do immunity testing. And what better way than with an $8,000 amplifier or $7,000 amplifier? Having said that, the advantage of doing that, probably one or two troublesome cases will pay for the whole lot of it. That's how fast the payback is on these things. So if we can ensure RF immunity or verify RF immunity, we can save ourselves a lot of grief and has a lot of other uses, as you might guess, day-to-day, hi-hi. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm going for this year. So end of the year, early next, you might see me with the Flex 6000 and their Maestro, that's what it's called, the keyboard thing, or the front panel thing is a Maestro and the like. So we'll see how that goes. So back to you, John.
Okay, well, nothing else. I'm playing around with antennas these days, keep trying different things. I put up a vertical tonight, and it runs 10 through 160. Pretty good results. The SRW is way low compared to my sloper, which is kind of interesting. Had no idea you could have with no tuner at all, it's all down below 2, the whole band range. And then playing around with a Yagi handheld 440, 2 meter, and the other one 440. But anyway, just fooling around. Anyway, back to you, and I'm done.
Nice. That's very nice. Okay. Anything from you, Bob?
No. You had some questions on that jumbo spot case. Or a Zoom spot case?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Number one, I'm trying to understand what the layout of that little grid thing that goes inside does not accommodate the things that have to go across, for external interfaces. And so that was one issue. But I mean, but number one, it's the radio is in the. The Zoom spot's in the case. But here's a couple of things I had to do. Number one, I had to take out that thingy that was meant to hold and support the boards because it just wasn't. The horizontal members were getting in the way of components and connectors and all kinds of things. So I could have sat there and honed them with a Dremel or with a utility knife, for quite a while. It would have been very challenging to get done. So I basically chose not to have it at all. That worked out fine. The other thing is, on the spot where you have the power input, is it? No. The, yes. On the end, where you have the micro SD card, you have a little, you know, cutout area for that, and that was fine, except that we ended up having to take the top little plastic piece across that gap off, because it didn't allow for the, it didn't allow you to get to the card properly. The card was binding on that, so I basically ended up just snapping that off and just closing the clamshell and all as well. The only other thing that was real obvious was that I could not put the display inside, but you didn't have my display dimensions and such, so it had to be a much wider case, meaning to properly mount it, it would have probably had to be, not only wider, you know, left, right, along its long length, have to be wider there, but across the short length, but also it would have probably had to have been taller to accommodate that third board inside. But I want to say it looks really great, and it's running fine, and it has adequate cooling for the purpose. So, that was another area I was a little concerned about, but no, it's fine. But I want to thank you for doing it, and there's definitely some room for improvement, but it was a great thing, and we're worth the effort, so thank you. And of course the microphone thing, I mean the radio stand thing was also fine. I haven't decided where I'm going to drill a hole in it and where to screw it down, but that's going to be the next thing too.
Yeah, just thinking, basically to put it together, the Raspberry, the Pi Zero goes in first on that board. Now, there is actually little nipples in the standoffs there that maybe it didn't fit properly, that if you get it right in there, then it actually holds the boards. And maybe you didn't get it in there, so it was resting on top of that. That's why the SD card didn't fit all the way down that board. The separator is like a puzzle. You got to figure out. It actually works perfectly with a jumbo spot, but you have to put it in the right orientation, and then it all works out. A jumbo spot is absolutely flat on the bottom, so it actually sits flat on the bottom there, and the antenna connector and the GPIO connector fits, and then that. So I believe you have the zoom spot, so I don't know what is different on that board. And then with the display, yeah, there's all different kinds of displays you can put on there.
Okay, now, so you successfully embarrassed me. So here's what I did. I put in that little interior piece upside down, and that was why it did not fit and clear things. This will work fine in retrospect once I put it in correctly.
I thought that I put it together in a specific way to hopefully put it so that that's the way it should go. So when you take it apart, you could just put it that way. Maybe I even have a diagram. I have a CAD diagram I can send you on how it goes together, and maybe I should give that out with that assembly. KD2, BKD, back to W2TTT.
Yeah, either simply email it to them. Yeah, that's exactly the problem, I'm sure. I just dropped power to mine, and I'm going to, gently do that. So the only other thing I had to do is I had to enlarge the square hole on the opposite end from the antenna to accommodate the connector coming out with the leads for my display, and I just used double stick to hold the display. It's all good. So now I'm going to open this thing back up and slide the thing in correctly. Back to you.
Yeah, if you want, I'll if you give me some dimensions in that, I'll make you a new top. That's not a problem. I'll make whatever. I actually got the design off the internet, but
people don't really understand tolerances that are doing things, and they make them to, like, the exact size, so, like, that board just fits in there, and if there's, you know, they don't leave you any extra room whatsoever, so I have to move things around and stretch things to be able to get some room just in case the board isn't exactly like a previous board, and there's a couple of thousandths difference or even a little 16th of an inch difference in the board layout.
Well, sure. And you kind of accomplished that with the hole for the antenna, you know. Your mileage may vary exactly where that antenna is going to come out, but it's close enough to the center, so it's cosmetically acceptable. It's fine.
Well, the zoom spot antenna isn't exactly in the center, or the jumbo spot antenna isn't in the center, but maybe the zoom spot is, so I kind of, like, put it there, so hopefully it'll work for both.
NJ2BS, repeat.
It worked fine without any funny adjustments.
That's what I was hoping.
Well, here, I got it open here. Let me stuff the... See if I can stuff the framework thing inside and close it up. Hold on a second. W2TGT. John, you want to say something while I'm killing time here?
Okay, not sure what to say. I guess I'll talk about my antenna rig. Let's see, the antenna farm here, I've got basically a double sloper running in a V configuration. One wire goes up 70 feet up in a tree to the northwest, and then another wire goes 90 degrees off to the left, and it goes up 65 feet, and it's probably my best antenna. It's still, the vertical's interesting, but the other antenna's probably got about 2 more dBs of gain, which I'm not sure why, but it always does. All right, so I filled some time in there. Back to you.
It's damn amazing what happens when you put in all the parts in the right direction.
Is that to Bob or me?
Oh, it's for both of you, but Bob can respond first since I was calling out his design.
Actually, somebody else's, but I just had to tweak it a little bit. So if you put that one piece in there where it's flat on the bottom of your RF board, and you see where that thing is kind of like offset to put the GPIO, it should just go right in there, and those little nipples on the end should fit right into the board.
They do, and they did, and it works great. Let me just finish screwing it together. So tell us more about your antennas, John.
Today, let's see. So the vertical, which is interesting, it's actually, I don't know if anybody's familiar with the company Chameleon. They make up basically this heavy-duty military 5-to-1 Unlen, I think it's called. It's actually a transformer. It's not a balloon. But anyway, it's kind of amazing how it can take either a wire or an aluminum pole and turn it into a multi-band antenna without a lot of tuning. And that's basically what I use for my base for both these antennas, the sloper and the vertical. And then I built a 20-meter Yagi, which is made out of mini hamsticks, which is surprisingly good performance. It gets about 8 dBs front to back, which is pretty amazing for a hamstick antenna. And on 20 meters, it really tunes in stations I can't get with either of the other antennas if I know where they are. If I don't know where they are, I won't find them. But anyway, back to you. What are you guys building anyway?
So these are called open spots or zoom spots. Zoom spot is the original design. But basically it's a hot spot. It's a 10 milliwatt radio that screws into a Raspberry Pi or Raspberry Pi Zero Whiskey, you know, the wireless one. And basically, if you run the Pi Star software on it, you can select it to dynamically drive it to a network for DMR, for Fusion, for P25, or for D-Star.
Okay, hate to say it, I'm not familiar with that protocol much. I'm mostly, HF and do that kind of stuff. Do a lot of computer building and stuff like that, but not run into that kind of stuff. Over.
Yeah, so have you seen the Pi Zero or Pi Zero W?
No, but I'll Google it and figure out what it is, I guess.
Okay, so the first thing you should know about having a Pi Zero, or a Pi Zero W, which is the one with wireless, is that you want a Pi 3 to go with it. So that way, whatever you're testing, you can test on a Pi 3, which has real interfaces and things like that, will run the same exact software, blah, blah, blah. And then once you're satisfied with it, you take the interface board, slam it on a Pi Zero, shove the SD card, the micro SD card into the smaller computers, and it now becomes a something that looks like a pair of brass knuckles without the finger loops. It's about that size, and in this case, that daughter board, for it, the Zone Spot, Open Spot board, has essentially a UHF 10 milliwatt UHF transceiver on it. So it will act as a base station, a simplex base station, and then pump whatever you transmit from your HT or your mobile rig in across the internet to whatever network apparatus you've decided to hook up to. And it'll provide, backbone connectivity that way. Now, some people have taken these and put them across mesh networks and used them as bridges, and there's ways of doing that as well. So, you're not just limited to having an open internet. There are actually there's another project to have a little, what I'll call server, back-end server, I call it a hub server, to, allow people to network without the real internet in place. So as long as you've got IP-based connectivity, even if it's in a private network, even if it's in a ham radio or Part 15 network, you can do that. And you can tie several of these together and do all kinds of interesting things.
Okay, so it sounds like it's the only thing I'm familiar that's probably even close to it is where we use WinLink Express, where we're using ham, where it's connected to the internet if you want it to be, or it's just going node to node via ham. Over.
Yeah, you can certainly do that, and the big deal here is that it's digital and therefore can either be a voice payload or a data payload, depending on the protocol you're using, on the end.
And so what kind of range does it have?
10 milliwatts on UHF? Yeah. Your immediate neighborhood. But you can get a Pi Hat board. I actually have one of those. I put mine on a Pi 3, and I'm about to tie it to a pair of Motorola, what's the Motorola desktop, the GM300, GR300 desktop repeaters. So you take two GM300s and you add a duplexer, a power supply, and some cables, and an interconnecting cable between the transceivers, and it turns it into a desktop repeater. About the width of a, 5 1/4 inch disk drive micro tower. And what you do with that is you go in the back of those radios, instead of using FM, you can then attach the modulation, demodulation capabilities of your Pi Hat transceiver, which is just basically a modem, if you will. And then you can have that be not just a networked access point, but also a local digital repeater in whatever protocols you've enabled.
Okay, so what, besides your own home use or whatever, what's the what's the end game for something like this?
Think of it as EchoLink, without having to think as hard, and where you can have, you know, networks of reflectors, and you can decide which reflector group you want to go play on. So it's sort of like reflectors with EchoLink.
So how many people are doing this? Are you a closed network, or are you open and trying to get other operators to be on it?
Oh, absolutely, more operators, more the merrier. I think globally there are northbound of 100,000 DMR IDs given out. God knows how many, you know, people are on D-Star using these things, or Fusion, and then T25 is kind of like the unknown, because I don't know how the administration of that goes. For DMR, you have to have a numeric ID that's assigned uniquely to you. You can use it across multiple radios, but if those radios are going to be used simultaneously, it's better to get assigned additional DMR IDs. So, for instance, I have two DMR IDs, my wife has her own, and we have three DMR radios. We have a mobile rig and two HDs. When the time comes, I'll get a DMR ID for my repeater as well, because it will need one. But as long as it's an access point, I don't need one.
Okay, but if I understand this right, then you require repeaters, et cetera. It's not a long range at all, correct?
Yes, because most of it's on VHF and UHF by definition, yeah.
Can it be applied across, like even 6 meters maybe?
Yeah, I suppose it could. So there's a limited number of radios. So like the FT-991 series radios, they do Fusion. Some of the 9100, so the ICOM 9100, and maybe a few others, they have the ability to do D-Star. So I would assume those would be, those two certainly would have that. And there are even some really creative things so that you can, let's say you had a Fusion radio and I had a DMR radio, we could meet on a particular reflector, and the reflector is smart enough to know that you're accessing with one protocol and I'm accessing with another, and to feed us each whatever we need to hear each other, if you will, like a proverbial United Nations real-time translator.
Sounds interesting. Probably try to avoid this because it sounds like something I'd get too far into. Over.
Yeah, well, welcome to my world. I understand. So I'll have more of a report on it next week, but I bought a 40 ampere hour, hard shell battery from BioNO Power to complement the 17 ampere hour one I have. And this boy weighs about 11 pounds or so, but has 40 ampere hours that I actually can use. You know, when you have a 40 ampere hour AGM or sealant acid battery, you can maybe pull 60% of its rating out, and the voltage sag is going to be pretty noticeable. On this thing, it starts at like 14.2 and 14.4 right after a charge, and until it goes below 12 volts. You can pretty much suck the current out of it you need to, so I'll be talking about that in the next week or so when I get a chance to use it more. I've charged it up, I'm satisfied that's ready to go, so tomorrow it will go into the mix, and we'll be taking it up to Camp Novibosco and running it for the weekend, and it will become my primary source of power other than my car, and I suspect it'll work just fine. Save me running power cords all over the place. A little more independent. Be able to run all kinds of computers and all kinds of stuff this way. So, film at 11, as they say. KD2BKD, back to you, K2BR.
So, W2TTT, Gordon, I have a project that I
maybe you could help, or maybe you know some insights on it. It has to do with MeshNet a little bit. Has to do with SIP phones. Has to do with Raspberry Pis. Pi 0W. I want to make a Pi 0W with its GPIO as the buttons, maybe a little display on there, into a SIP phone for $25 or less to use on MeshNet. Do you know anything about SIP phone applications on Raspberry Pis? KD2BKD.
No, but I'm going to save you some pain. So, you take the Raspberry Pi, you want to use the whiskey, that's fine. And you can use the Wi-Fi on it to be an access an access point, which can then be attached to a home network or a mesh network, whatever you want, as long as it's got a separate AP. And you could use the audio in and out that's provided. There's an audio interface on that board somewhere, which I think there is on the Pi Zero. I would go with that. Does the Pi Zero have the audio in and out?
I believe the Pi Zero has audio out via HDMI only, but I have a miniature USB sound card, which should be able to plug into the USB port there and make audio in and out with that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Sure. In fact, I'd recommend doing that anyway, just to make yourself sane. Sure. That, a touch screen to provide a dialer, and the like, yeah, sure. That would be eminently doable, and you keep the audio load down by using a little headphones that plugs into the audio interface, the USB audio interface. That would be just, you know, splendid. Now, I have here, actually, it's a little big, but I have here like a 7-inch HDMI and USB touchscreen. So it outputs HDMI and inputs, the touchscreen stuff via the USB port that's also provided. So conceivably, Bob, you could take that and, you know, build out the screen to have a SIP phone using that. I mean, the screen's kind of on the big side, but, you know, what the hell? I mean, that's not a big deal. It would certainly be useful. You could go with a smaller one. They do exist, but you wouldn't be able to use the full HDMI. I mean, I think I have either a 720p or a 1080p screen here, and it's 7 inches. It's pretty darn awesome.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing this for a project, because I know on Arden and that, everybody's looking, oh, where can I get a SIP phone? Where can I get a SIP phone? Well, here's some directions. You can make a SIP phone as a Pi 0W, and I would design some kind of a cool-looking case with the buttons and the screen and the microphone and the speaker built into it and stuff, and just write it up as a project online and see if anybody wants to make one. But I have to do one first, and just looking at if anybody has any experience with actually making a SIP phone out of a Raspberry Pi and not just a PBX. I know it's doable because where I work, we're getting into SIP phones now. I just tested some, and they're running under Android operating system, which is basically just another layer above something of a Raspberry Pi. KD2BKD, back to W2TTT.
Yeah, sure. So, here's a couple of things. One, let me give you a reason not to bother. There are plenty of free SIP phone apps for phones and tablets that you can take, as long as it's Wi-Fi enabled, an old phone. And you're in Fat City, so you can save yourself a lot of that aggravation at work by simply using that interface. Just keep in mind to recycle an old phone. I see guys on Arden going crazy for stuff like that. If you need a Grandstream 1450, it's a two-line SIP phone. I'll be happy to part with one at an extremely attractive price. It's virtually no money. It's really coffee money, essentially. Because I have a bunch of them. They're really useful. In fact, I've even converted a couple of them to be 12-volt PoE. Now, mind you, internally they run at 5 volts, so what you do is you take the PoE pins and you make sure that you label the hell out of it so that people understand that do not put in 48 volts in this thing, put only in 12 or 15, something in that range. Actually, I'll accept anything from 8 until 16 volts on the little modules I use. They're the size of your fingernail. And on the inputs, on the other side, I basically just wire over with some really light wire to the 5-volt input jack that's already provided on the unit, and I just tape over the jack on the outside so that it can't be used. And I put a P-Touch label by the on the back that says, you know, 8 or 9 to 16 volts PoE. So that way there's no misunderstandings. And I use, you know, that I use essentially 12 to 16 volt PoE for my mesh nodes in the field anyway. You know, essentially, whatever you can get out of a car battery and an alternator, that's fine. And only when I have a longer run do I run the actual 24 volts, because the unit runs with constant with good sensitivity and the same power output above 10 volts. So whether you go 10 volts or 24 volts, the power output's the same, the receiver sensitivity is the same.
All right, I know you can make a smartphone or a tablet or whatever into a SIP phone. I do it all the time. Just looking for something different, but, so the other project is to, make a Raspberry Pi, EchoLink, node and, connect it up to this repeater, which I'll do. I'm still working with the, Hi-Fi Berry. You'll see I just sent out an email. So the Hi-Fi Berry board is, I didn't know nothing about Raspberry Pi. Just months ago, now I'm building a jukebox with one, which should be a pretty cool, and you'll see a picture of it in your email coming up. KD2BKD.
W2TGT. So, with the Highberry board, are you taking it such that you're going to stream the content off the internet, or are you going to basically have use your own collection as the music source?
My own collection is on a flash drive, a USB flash drive, because it's just easier for me to just power the thing down, take out the flash drive, stick it in my Windows computer, and manipulate all the files there, stick it back into the Raspberry Pi system. I'm using Fruitbox. I found Fruitbox, which is makes the GUI for a jukebox, and I had to create my own GUI for my own jukebox style, and I actually purchased a 1953 AMI wall box that must have been in a diner someplace, and converting it over to, which is called retro-teching it, into being a totally digital jukebox, except for the coin mechanism, which does work, so you'll have to put coins in it and to play some music. KD2BKD.
What is this, your vacation fund? So if you want to have music, you got to put the quarter in? That's pretty funny. So what are you going to do about the flippy pages and the little cards?
Well, the little cards and the pages are a screen. That's done digitally on a HDMI screen mounted sideways. And I made a trigger on the top so that you can push a lever and it done on a 3D printer, and it pushes a little tiny switch inside there, and it goes to the next page, or the next page, or the next page, and it's going to actually use the original button, not the button mechanism. It's crazy the way that this old 1950s stuff works. Before computers, the electromechanical way that they decided on what page you're on and what song you're selecting from that page, I don't even want to try to figure out how that thing works. But once I get done with it and get some time, I'll put that back on eBay and sell that as spare parts. KD2BKD.
That's wonderful, John.
Okay, so what do you guys program this with?
C or Python.
Okay, and you interface it, I guess, through the whatever, HDMI?
So there's, you can enable, a command line interface with a shell, like a shell interface using SSH or even Telnet if you really want to be, if you're in a secure environment, you can certainly do that as well. Yes, they also have web page interfaces as well.
Okay, interesting. I'm pulling up some stuff on the internet and just looking at it. Yeah, it looks like something I need to stay away from. Over.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Well, I mean, I know people who have all kinds of databases on these things, and, in fact, I have a book here which I recommended to a colleague. My son recommended it to me, my middle son recommended it to me, Beginning Artificial Intelligence with a Raspberry Pi. Fascinating book, and yes, it's written by him.
I've fooled around with AI with when I worked for Dustel. We were working on doing a troubleshooting protocol using AI. It was an interesting project. But anyway, yeah, this looks cool. But like I said, I got so many hobbies now. This is the last thing I need to add to my workbench.
Well, I'm going to give you a little story. This radio is on what I lovingly refer to as my tinker bench. It is a 4-foot by 2-foot. Piece of 1-inch, desktop that I bought at Home Depot and urethaned the crap out of it and already needs it to be sanded down and redone. And I basically built a hutch that has little shelves on it and accommodates cables behind inside the hutch. Has two permanently mounted bookshelf speakers, two 12-volt HP 2011 XI monitors that are screwed onto a shelf so that they can't fall out. I've got a little spot in the corner for on an upper shelf. It's a DIN spot for a Kenwood car radio. Then on top of that, with some air spacers, on top of that, I have a small wireless set-top box for my DirecTV in the house. And when I get around to it, I gotta put an amplifier in here, a separate amplifier in here, so that I can run SiriusXM separately from whatever is going on with the Kenwood, or separately from what's going on with the DirecTV. I'm actually gonna put a smaller monitor on. Ultimately, this is going to have a cabinet door kind of thing on this little hutch, but on the inside of the door is going to be yet another monitor or two for smaller projects. But one of them will become the monitor for the DirecTV, and maybe a second one for over-the-air television. That way, it's all in one, and it rides on two 32-inch or so pedestals. Rack pedestals, open frame type, with recessed rack mounting points in up the middle, and I put it up on casters, so it's not 29 inches; it's more like 36 inches high. So my desk chair for it is more like a stool with casters. And that's what I use for my tinker bench, and it's all wrapped around Raspberry Pis, Beagle Bones, and other small computers.
Sounds interesting. You got to email me a picture if you don't mind.
Well, right now I'm not real proud of how it's being cluttered up. But I've got also monitors in the I've got laptops on some of the desktop surface, because in the process of moving it up here, it breaks down to three pieces: the hutch part at each of the two pedestals. And the hutch required quite a bit of effort on my part and my part of my youngest son. But it does break down to three pieces, and it's up on the third floor now. I'll be happy to dig up some old pictures. Maybe I'll post them to the ComTech group. I think you remember that, yes?
Okay, so it doesn't sound very portable.
Well, not where it is now, but what's nice about it is I can get to the back of it. There's an AC strip with a bunch of outlets across the back. There's also a 12-volt, actually I had to set up a 13.8 switcher, 50-amp switcher that's in the background that's bolted into the thing too. So it's all part of this thing. But what's nice about it is I can pull it out and get to the back, make changes, and shove it back in for the few things that I need to do. But there are not one, not two, but three 12-position rig runners in the front side of this thing, one up on the top inside shelf and one on the left and right side on the low part. So I can run all kinds of stuff to test and trial with and make sure I like here. And I've actually done that already. It sat downstairs in the corner of the living room for a year, and it was about 6 months longer than I wanted it to be down there, but there were two things keeping me from doing it. One is cleaning up my office enough to accommodate it. Two, I kept making further changes to it. The one thing that was a casualty of the move is that I had to unscrew and really I have to rethink how to do it. I had a little pull-out slide on one side so that I could put a laptop without having to tie up the 4-foot by 2-foot hutch surface. So on the left side, I'm going to pull out I'm going to have a little slide-out plane shelf, which again I'll finish with urethane and actually spar varnish is what I tend to use. But it is very good. I mean, it is my small computer tinker bench. That's what I use it for. And because it's a little higher, you don't have issues with your back and stuff like that. It's all good. Bob?
Yeah, no comment.
Okay, but I'm definitely enamored of the idea of your SIP phone. I definitely want to take a shot at that and go from there. Let me see if I can find the pictures of this bench. Are you both members of the ComTech group?
I don't think so.
I am.
Yeah, John, when you get a chance, you might want to apply for that ComTech group on Yahoo Groups. It's a closed group. You don't get spammed. It's pretty solid and reliable. I'm trying to think, when did I... Good Lord, it's probably a year ago I made these pictures, so I got to... I got to look around a little bit for the pictures, but I will find them for you.
So, Bob, are you using the Raspberry to make your zip phone?
I have thought about it. I haven't gone any further. I just have been working on the jukebox project, which I have been testing out a DSP board, an audio DSP board, and figured once I get it working, I'm just going to put it into a project. I've been doing this for the past month or more, and I've got maybe two more weeks left to go.
NJ2BS, repeat.
And it's only one Raspberry you're using, or you use multiple Raspberries to do different functions?
No, there's one Raspberry Pi in there that does the audio stuff. The way I wanted to control it was the way the original jukebox worked, with a single press. There's a one button per record song, so you push that one button, and I ran out of GPIOs on the Raspberry because the Hi-Fi Berry used some of them, so I programmed up an Arduino to be a keyboard simulator, so I have an additional 53 or 54 GPIOs, which I used about 40 of them. So I used a Mega. I didn't actually use a Mega. I used a Do, which can be a keyboard simulator. So that's how I did that. So it's a Raspberry Pi and Arduino project. KD2BKD.
Sounds interesting. I'd like to see a picture of that too. K2LAX, over.
I'm looking to see if I have something resembling a finished picture of this thing, but I built it so long ago that it's like an effort to go figure out where it is. I'm working on it, though. Actively looking for this stuff as we speak. It's pretty good when you get a picture of yourself with a cute girl, and it's your wife of 35 years. You got a lot of them, apparently. W2TTTK2BAR. Still searching. I'm back as far as March of last year, and now we're getting into the area where it's likely to appear. So, Bob, you decided that you were going to, you know, use an Arduino to give yourself additional GPIOs?
Yeah, that's how I did it. I used an Arduino it's an Arduino Duo, D-U-E, Duo, that can simulate a keyboard. So when you press a button on my jukebox and want to select A1, which I don't have A1, it's just a single press, you push that button, I send A1 to the Raspberry Pi. So and it also does some LED blinking and stuff. And then actually I have the Arduino handling the power up and power down. So when you start it up, the Arduino actually controls relays. So it will blink red lights saying, I'm starting to power up. And it will blink the lights. And then eventually, when I feel, after a certain amount of time, it will send a command to the Pi to start the application, the fruit box application, and turn on the display, so you don't really know that it's a Raspberry Pi. All of a sudden, it just pops on, and it says, oh, I'm a jukebox. And I also have a button that says power down. You push that button, it will send the shutdown command to the Raspberry Pi and start blinking the red light, saying, don't unplug me, don't unplug me. I'm powering down, and when it's done with that, I have green lights come on and say, okay, you can unplug me now. So it does. The Arduino does a few things to manage the Raspberry Pi.
Sure. John, are you a J-O-N John or J-O-H-N John?
J-O-N.
Thought so. Okay, I got that right. All right, I will copy the ComTech group for this while at it. John, you'll also get the opportunity to see how to sign up with the ComTech group. But let's see. Yep. Just need to do this, that, and the other thing, and there we go. At the point where you'll see it, it had an HF transceiver on there, and I was playing with two laptops. The one to the left on the slide-out was a work laptop for work, and the one on the right was being used with an SDR play. And I can walk you through some of it, because much of what's there